It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, Omicron cases are surging, and some estimates say that could push millions to call in sick from work. We'll look at the strain on small businesses at this stage of the pandemic here in Wisconsin and around the country. First, have you looked at the cost of used cars lately? According to Edmunds.com, the average price in November was $29,000. That's up 39% from the previous November. It's also more than what you'll pay for certain new vehicles. And for a 9-year-old car, the average cost is $14,000. It's not good news if you're a prospective buyer. But if you're a seller, different story. If you're trading in your vehicle, it's going to be worth more. We want to hear what you're seeing at 800-642-1234. Are you in the market for a new or used vehicle? Are you going to try to hang on to what you've got until prices come down? How are growing car prices affecting your life if you're a mechanic or work at a dealership? What kind of business are you seeing? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jamie Page Deaton is editorial director at InvestorPlace.com, former executive editor of the U.S. News Best Cars team. Jamie, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Car prices high. I mentioned that Edmunds report. That's just one data point, but this is the real deal, right? Car prices are up.
Car prices are up. This might be the only time where your car is not a depreciating asset. This might be the only time where you could make money off of that, you know, that car that you haven't been driving that's been sitting in your driveway for so long. This really puts, if you're selling a car, now's a great time. But the flip side is, if you have to buy a car, whether new or used, you're going to pay more than you would have just a couple years ago.
Well, you set up this clip we have. A listener called in a couple months ago. We did a segment about the economy. She had a story about the price, the value of her vehicle. Here's a listen.
I recently used my truck as collateral to get a small loan for my daughter to finish college. And as I have a 2015 Chevy Silverado. And as she was looking up the value according to Kelley Blue Book, she told me my truck appreciated and my truck is actually worth several thousand dollars more now than when I purchased it in 2018. And I said to her, would you look that up again? Because that just doesn't seem right. Trucks don't make money. They depreciate. And that's when I thought, okay, this is real. This is really happening.
Well, there you go. Exactly what you just said, Jamie. Used cars appreciating in value, which is rare. What is driving this?
Well, it all comes back to COVID, like most things. There have been major supply disruptions in the automotive sector, specifically around computer chips and semiconductors. And those are key components for new cars. That's put a squeeze on new car inventory, which in turn has moved some people out of the new car market into the used car market. And so really what it's about is there's a lot more competition for those used cars that are there. There's more because there's more people looking for them. That's more demand. More demand equals higher prices.
Something earlier on I'd seen, I don't know if this is still part of the deal, Jamie, car rental companies, they have this usual cycle of when they sell off their old inventory, when they buy new stuff. COVID messed that up too. Is that still echoing and leading to a shortage of used cars?
Yes, absolutely. So at the beginning of COVID, you know, with all the travel restrictions, rental car companies, honestly, they panicked quite a bit and they ended up selling off a large portion of their fleets because they didn't want to deal with, the upkeep costs if no one was going to be renting cars. That has really come back to not only bite them, but also used car buyers, because now you're not just competing with, you know, the guy down the street. You're actually competing with the rental car company, because not only are they not selling the cars they have now, because rental cars are a big source of supply in the used car market, but now rental car companies are actually starting to buy used cars. So the next car that you rent may not be, you know, the newest model or even just 1 to 2 years old. It could be 3, 4, 5 years old because of the shortage of new cars. Rental car companies have had to replenish their fleets and they're going to the used car market to do it.
We're looking at the high prices these days of used cars, new cars too, but used cars. Jamie Page Deaton is with us from investorplace.com, longtime observer of the vehicle scene. You can join in at 800-642-1234 if you have some observations on the ground. If you've been shopping, if you've bought or sold a car lately, what was it like? Was there an empty used car lot? You're picking from one or two cars, or did things work out pretty well for you? If you fix cars, if you sell cars, what are you seeing? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Jamie, let's get a little bit of advice here for that person who, you know, they need a car and they kind of need it now to be able to get back and forth to work, right? What do you recommend to someone who's seeing a sticker shock when they go out and hunt for the car they need?
Yeah, first of all, my condolences to that person because it really is a tough, tough market. But you can kind of squeeze the best deal out by going against the grain. You know, the audio you played earlier with the woman talking about her truck. Trucks are extremely popular. More demand equals higher prices. So if you're in the market for a car, really just swim against the current and find something that is not all that popular. That means stay away from trucks, stay away from SUVs, stay away from crossovers, and instead look at smaller cars and hybrids because those are the ones that are going to have less demand and you're going to be able to get a little bit of a price cut, not quite what, you know, we've come to expect in other markets, but you're going to pay less for that, or at least not get gouged quite so much as you would on a popular SUV or something like that. And the good news is too, you know, if you go for those smaller cars and hybrids, you end up with lower operating costs as well. So overall, you're saving money. And the other thing too is interest rates are very, very low. So even though you might be paying more on the price of a used car, you can save some money on your auto loan if you're financing that purchase. Make sure that you shop around for your loan as much as you shop around for your car. A lot of people think you have to take the dealer financing, and that just isn't the case. You can get pre-approved for a loan from your bank, from your credit union, you know, even from another bank. You know, if you go to bankrate.com, they will have people competing for your business with auto loans. And you can take that loan into the dealer and say, hey, can you beat this financing offer and save a little bit of money on your interest rate, even if you really can't save money on the car?
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Cyril is with us in Madison. Cyril, hi.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Good. What do you want to tell us about?
Well, I wanted to tell you about something that's been happening in our house for at least the last year. My wife owns a 4-year-old Buick Enclave, and I own a 10-year-old Captiva. And we have been receiving a lot of mail from first the dealers that we bought the vehicles from, and lately from any dealer that is selling the same make of car, asking us, please, would you consider selling us your car so that we can offer you a generous rebate or deduction on any car that we have in stock or that we can order for you?
Wow. Cyril, are you gonna give in, or are you waiting for the right price, or are you fine with the cars you have right now?
Well, my wife's car, she bought brand new, So she's fine with ours. Mine, I'm happy with it. It's running fine. It has 100,000 miles on it, but it's still running well. So I'm in no hurry just yet.
Excellent, Cyril. Thank you so much for sharing that. So, Jamie, for people who have a car, unlike Cyril, that they do want to unload, this might be a pretty good time for them.
Oh, yes, absolutely. This is a point where, you know, just like regular shoppers are having trouble finding inventory, dealers are having trouble finding inventory. So what he's experiencing is not at all strange. Dealers are reaching out. I've even heard and seen articles about people will go buy a new car, and a week later, the dealer wants to buy it back for $10,000 more than they paid for it. And it really is just a crazy, crazy car market. And, you know, if you have an extra car that you're not going to use, then yeah, go ahead and sell it. But I think actually Cyril makes a really good point in saying, you know, know, my car is running fine, I don't think I'm going to sell it. Because even if you go and you get a great deal on your trade-in, what you have to remember is the new car prices or the other used car prices that you're going to use to replace that trade-in, they're going to be really high as well. So this is a great time for you to sell your car to a company like CarMax or Carvana. Carvana lets you sell it all online. They come pick it up, and you can get a pretty good deal from it. CarMax, you do have to drive it to a CarMax store, but they'll still give you a pretty good deal. And I've even seen regular dealers do where you don't have to buy a car from them. You can just bring your car in and sell it to them. So you don't have to do the trade-in if you don't need to replace that car.
Thanks for that call, Cyril. We're talking about a big jump in used car prices. Jamie Page Deaton is with us, editorial director at investorplace.com, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you in the market for a new vehicle or a used vehicle? What kind of sticker shock are you experiencing right now? If you can't afford to buy a vehicle, how are you getting by? Have you sold a car in recent months? If you own or work at a car dealer or a mechanic shop, what's business like for you? Are people trying to get more life out of that car for a little longer? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk now about the rising price of used cars. According to Edmunds.com, the average used car in the U.S. cost $29,000 in November, a big jump from the previous year. Jamie Page Deaton is with us, editorial director at InvestorPlace.com, former executive editor of the U.S. News Best Cars team. And you can still join in at 800-642-1234. Have you tried to sell or buy a car lately? Are you surprised by the numbers that were showing up along the way? If you have an older car that you're thinking of replacing, are you trying to get by? Maybe do a little more maintenance, hope to squeeze an extra year out of it. If you sell cars, if you're an auto dealer, what kind of things are coming through your lot? If you fix cars, love to hear from you as well at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jamie, for someone thinking, yeah, now I was thinking I was going to, you know, sell my old car, buy a new one, get on the market, but I can wait. Should they? I mean, are they going to wait for a long time and the things are still going to be the same, maybe worse? Or is there a thought that things are going to get better, cheaper?
You know, there's a thought that things are going to get better, but I want to put some caveats out there. So once the supply chain issues work themselves out, then you should start to see supplies increase. And, you know, in a logical world, that would mean that prices start to come down. The one kind of caveat about that is are the automotive makers, are they going to be addicted to these new higher prices they're able to command? And are they going to actually lower prices? And it's the same with the dealers because, you know, MSRPs on cars, they really haven't changed. What's changed is the dealer markup. And so it's really going to come down to the individual dealers. Are they going to follow, you know, are they going to be allowing the prices to come down, you know, when demand subsides a little bit? And that's really a big question mark. And I think you're going to see that answer on a dealer by dealer basis. Because they have a lot of freedom in that realm. And I think, too, it's a good opportunity for dealers to, you know, maybe to provide some really good customer service by bringing prices down as they see demand falling as well. But there are going to be some dealers out there who, you know, don't do that. We've already seen some dealers really putting some massive markups on new cars as well as used cars. And so it's a little bit disheartening as somebody who's, you know, a consumer and for consumers everywhere. But it really just comes down to if you can wait this market out, you should wait this market out because right now prices are just really, really high. And if you wait it out for a year or so, you're almost guaranteed to get a better deal.
Now, you mentioned the kinds of cars people are looking for, and I'd be interested in hearing about that from our listeners. If you're shopping, are you looking for a truck, an SUV, a hybrid, or take what you can get? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Jamie, you said trucks and SUVs popular, hybrids not as in demand. We just had this period of noticeably higher gas prices. They've dipped some since then. Sometimes when that happens, it puts people in a mind of thinking about gas mileage. Sounds like maybe not.
No, I mean, gas prices really have to get well above $5 a gallon for a hybrid to really make sense, for you to really be able to make the money back over the life of the hybrid, particularly since a lot of cars that aren't hybrids have gotten really, really fuel efficient with their engines. That's not to say that there's not value in a hybrid, because there definitely is, but we haven't seen the big uptick in hybrids that you see typically when you have higher gas prices. But we have seen hybrid sales increase, but that's mainly due to the fact that people can't get into other cars. And so the hybrids are what's left on the lot. And so hybrid sales go up, and hopefully do it, you know, convert some people into driving a little bit of a cleaner vehicle.
Are the prices of those hybrids, and again, those less in high demand vehicles, are they like normal? Are they closer to Blue Book prices than all the other vehicles we've been talking about?
I wouldn't say that they're normal, but they're not as high. Like, you're not going to see the massive, you know, $10,000 markup that you might see on a truck. You might only see, you know, you might end up paying MSRP. And I would say in this market, if you pay MSRP and not above, you're getting an incredible deal. But with the hybrids, you might see, you know, an increase of, you know, maybe 5% above MSRP. And that's, while it's not a great deal, and it kind of hurts to pay above the price, particularly when, you know, as car buyers, we always want to negotiate the dealer down below MSRP. It's really not that bad given what the market is.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. We've got Chris on the line in Milwaukee. Hi, Chris.
How are you, Rob?
Good. What's your story?
Well, I'm an auto recycler. I've been a state licensed recycler for 39 years. I just left a Chevrolet store within the last 5 minutes here. And what we're noticing in our business is that there is definitely an uptick in business. People are fixing what they can because of new car prices, and used car prices are, you know, just outrageous right now. But also that the insurance companies, in my opinion, are fixing vehicles right now that maybe 2 years ago they wouldn't have fixed, because they're worth more money, so they're not hitting that total loss number like they were just a short time ago.
Wow. How dramatic a change are you seeing, Chris? Like a little bit, or is this really noticeable?
Well, our business last year was up 18%.
Oh,
so
that's not too shabby. Chris, thank you so much for sharing your perspective on that. Jamie, what do you think?
Yeah, this is one of those things, particularly when you bring up insurance into it, that, you know, there's some really complicated calculus that's going around, you know, whether or not to repair the car, because repair costs are also going to be a little bit higher than they normally would. And they're also going to take longer because of, again, you know, supply chain issues with getting parts to repair cars with. And so this is really a good time to drive carefully, because if you get into an accident, well, that's going to take a lot longer to fix. Your insurance company, just like the caller said, they may choose to fix something that they would have totaled, you know, just a couple of months ago. And the other thing to remember too is, if your car is declared a total loss by your insurance company, that payout may not, though it would be higher than it otherwise would, it still may not be enough to get you into a comparable car. So, you know, my piece of advice is to not only wait out this market if you can, but make sure that you're driving carefully so that you don't end up in an accident with expensive repairs. And then also stay on top of your maintenance, because you also don't want to, you know, skip an oil change or two and then suddenly run into a big repair issue where you have to wait, you know, months and months for the parts to come in, because that is something that we're starting to see. It's just taking forever to get cars repaired.
Chris, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Jamie Page Deaton about the high cost of used cars. We heard from Brody on Facebook, who writes, seeing as how almost everyone in the state requires a car just to participate in the labor market and not be destitute, this is a serious problem for the average person. And Jamie, I see some outfits, as they try to measure the impact of these costs, saying, you know, is the current cost of used cars out of reach for the average person? What kind of calculations, what kind of thinking is there on that?
Well, it's absolutely out of the reach for a lot of workers out there. I mean, if the average price of a used car now is about $29,000. And if you think somebody who's working, you know, in a service position, even if they're able to get, you know, that wage of about $15 an hour, when you factor in housing costs and you factor in, you know, medical costs and utilities and things, then yeah, that average used car price is out of reach. And they're going to end up, and, you know, it's sad, because they're going to end up with a car from the lower end of that of that range, you know, maybe around $10,000, which is still hard to swing. And those are the cars that are going to require a lot of repairs and a lot of maintenance. So it's another example of how expensive it is to be poor, because it keeps you out of the labor market. You're paying more for a car than you otherwise would. And I think it really is difficult for a lot of people to afford these new prices. And I think for a lot of families, it's going to cause a lot of crisis moments.
Well, Jamie, as you said earlier, this price situation may not resolve itself in the short run. What other kinds of things are you watching for in the auto industry over the coming year?
Over the coming year, I mean, we're really just watching to see when the prices will come down. There were some early indicators that they had started to plateau at the dealer, the auctions, which is where most dealers buy their used cars that they turn around and sell to consumers. Those auctions saw a plateau of prices in November. So we might start to see them coming down as we go into, you know, January, February, March. But even still, like, it's not going to be a steep decline. It's going to be a low, just a slow burn down into where prices are more affordable. And like I said, it's really going to be up to individual dealers to make sure that they're pricing their cars, you know, in a way that's appropriate for the demand that they're seeing.
I know some people in our last minute, Jamie, like to go into a car dealer and wheedle and bargain as they're buying that new car. Is there, are we just talking to a brick wall here, given what's going on?
You know, best of luck if you want a bargain. I think it's worth a shot, right? You know, you don't ask, you don't have. But just be realistic with it. And, you know, if the dealer's coming back and saying, no, I can't, you know, I can sell that to somebody, that car to somebody else for more money, don't take it personally. It's a business. You know, they've got to make their money too. So just, you know, feel free to bargain, but just be realistic about your expectations. You could go over to cardgurus.com. They have a great price estimator on used cars. So you can see if a car is a good deal or not based on the mileage and where it's located and things. So that you have options to educate yourself. Make sure you do that research before you start to negotiate. And again, just be realistic. You're not likely to get a really great deal right now.
Jamie, thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Jamie Page Deaton, editorial director at investorplace.com, former executive editor of the U.S. News Best Cars team. We talked to her about soaring used car prices and when they might come back down. Coming up after the news, labor shortages, supply chain disruptions, and now staff calling in sick. We'll look at the challenges facing small businesses as they try to keep their doors open during the Omicron surge. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll meet a pair of award-winning Wisconsin farmers who overhauled their operation with sustainability and conservation in mind. Now, cases of the new Omicron variant are spreading quickly around the country. That's having a big impact, among others, on small businesses. In the last 2 years, they've weathered shutdowns, capacity restrictions, and the financial toll of the pandemic. Now, workers are calling in sick in the middle of a nationwide labor shortage, leading some workplaces to be so short-staffed they have to temporarily shut their doors. We're talking now about how small businesses are doing at this point in the pandemic, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been going out to bars and restaurants, or have you started to scale back with COVID-19 cases rising? Are you a small business owner yourself? Are customers showing up? Are you having trouble with staffing? Are you having a lot of staff out because of positive COVID tests? Are you able to keep your doors open? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Ruth Simon covers small business and entrepreneurship for the Wall Street Journal. Ruth, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
You've been following the staffing challenges Omicron is creating for businesses. How common is it for people for workplaces to have multiple staff members out at the same time with a positive COVID test?
It's incredibly common. Lots and lots of small businesses are struggling with this. Either workers are positive, or they have family members who are positive, or they've been exposed to someone who tested positive. And for a lot of small business owners, every day is juggling. They wake up and they don't know who's going to be in and who's not going to be able to make it.
You and your colleagues have talked to business owners really around the country dealing with this. Are there particular sectors, particular kinds of workplaces that you found are being hit particularly hard?
I think it's particularly hard for businesses that do face-to-face contact. So we talked to restaurants, salons, spas. They were all having a hard time. My colleagues today were reporting about how manufacturers are also having trouble as well, and some of them are having to slow down production.
Are we seeing places have to shut their doors, not because of, you know, a public shutdown order or anything like that, but just because they simply don't have the human power?
Yes, I did talk to some businesses that had to temporarily shut down because they did not have enough workers. I talked to a salon owner who had to shut down for 2 weeks in the middle of December because 15 of his 18-person staff had tested positive for the virus. I talked to a restaurant owner in Boston that had to close down for a couple days last week because he just did not have enough staff.
Now, we've seen small businesses, especially the restaurants and other, as you said, you know, face-to-face businesses, they took hits from shutdown orders when they could be open. Maybe customers were reluctant to go in. Now, this, can you talk about the financial toll this series of events is taking on some of these outfits?
I think it's both a financial toll and also a mental toll. Mm. So they're not pulling in the revenue that they would if they could be fully up and running. Some of them have had to reduce hours. And I think also the business owners are just exhausted. It's been a very tough couple of years. And I think one of the very hard things is a lot of people thought that the worst of it was over in October. Many of the businesses that I talked to have staffs that were vaccinated and boosted. And for the most part, people aren't going into the hospital among the employees of the businesses I talk to, but they're not coming into work either.
Talking to Ruth Simon with the Wall Street Journal, looking at the impact of the latest COVID-19 surge on businesses, especially small businesses. You can join in with your firsthand report at your workplace at 800-642-1234. Is it tough getting enough staff to keep the doors open between a labor shortage and a lot of positive test cases? 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. And Ruth, this is all happening amidst a wider labor shortage, even when we don't have a COVID surge, right? Is that affecting some of these businesses you talk to?
That's absolutely true. In the past months, even before this hit, just about every business I spoke with was having trouble finding the workers they needed. So many of them were short-staffed to begin with, and this just adds to that pain and that anxiety. And I think one of the other things that's really hard is sometimes they don't know. Someone may have the sniffles or a sore throat, and they don't know. Is that just a cold, or is that COVID?
Right. Are businesses working to try to make sure they can get tests for people to answer that question?
Some businesses are. I think it's harder for small businesses. It can be costly to get the tests. The tests have been hard in some locations to get.
There have been a series of relief efforts going back to 2020, many of them helping some of the specific businesses we've been talked about, the hardest hit businesses. Is that money still out there, still flowing, or is there talk of maybe a new round in Congress?
The money from the Paycheck Protection Program, which was the big aid program for small businesses, that's all gone and done. I focus more on talking to the businesses than to members of Congress. I think there's been some talk about that. I know restaurants have been pushing for more relief. I can't give you odds on it, though.
Sure. Now, school openings and closures, another factor here. Are you hearing from businesses, not just, hey, my employee's relative is sick, but my employee's kid can't go into school because they were shut down because of staffing shortages, and that has that domino effect.
And that's another issue. If your kid can't get to school, I mean, last year that was a big challenge and kept a lot of people home. So there are these tremendous ripple effects. Someone was raising with me the point, if the bus drivers can't pick up the kids for school, or, you know, there are just all these effects through the economy.
When you talk to business owners, are they feeling like if they just get through this one more surge, they can get back to normal? Or are they kind of in a, oh, no, not again phase still?
One of the business owners I talked to, he said about 30% of his staff had had the virus, and he was really hoping that he was near the end of it. If you look at the experience in South Africa, there's been some talk that this surge will die down. I think the hard thing is we don't know what will come next, but there is a hope that they can, many people are hoping they'll get through this surge and things will get back to at least some semblance of normal.
I heard from a caller who can't come on the air, who works for the post office, said they're short staffed there. It's restricting their ability to take vacations. Even when they can show up, the short staffing affects the workers there. And we'd already heard, Ruth, about a burnout facing a lot of employees in workplaces during COVID. Is this, you know, I'm the one cook who can show up at the restaurant today? Is that increasing that feeling of burnout?
I think it is. And you find that business owners are asking employees who are healthy, can they put in extra hours? One salon owner that I talked to said several of his employees volunteered to work an extra 10 hours each so they could keep that particular salon open because so many people were out sick. But it is exhausting. It does take a toll on both workers and employers.
We're talking to Ruth Simon. She covers small business and entrepreneurship for the Wall Street Journal. She's with us today to talk about how small businesses are doing at this point in the pandemic. A big story here, trouble keeping staff at the workplace in part because of very common positive COVID tests. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you seen these changes? Have you seen short staffing in the small businesses where you live? Maybe the workplace where you work. If you're a customer regularly of bars and restaurants, are you slowing things down? Maybe ordering from home instead? If you're a small business owner yourself, how is this latest surge in cases affecting your workplace? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Coming up, we'll check out what's going on at some Wisconsin businesses. That's up next here on Central Time. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our look at the rise in COVID-19 cases around the country and specifically what it means for workplaces, restaurants, shops, other small businesses. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Has this hit your business yet? Whether you're a business owner or you work at one, if you're a restaurant worker, love to hear what you're seeing. Are people coming in to dine in? Are you short-staffed, overworked? Are you a former restaurant worker by choice? Have you left that field in the last couple of years? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Tell us how the latest COVID surge is affecting your workplace. Ruth Simon stays with us from the Wall Street Journal. Now Christine Hadfield joins us with a closer look at Wisconsin businesses. She's WPR's Second Century News Fellow. Christine, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob. Good to be here.
You talked to some small business owners in Wisconsin. What kind of things did they tell you about how Omicron is impacting them?
I mean, Rich Kramer and I, he was the other reporter on this story. We talked to a few business owners. I will preface, this was mainly Milwaukee, Madison. Odds are the situation will be a little bit different in the other parts of the state. I mean, we're just seeing a wide range of effects, even besides people actually getting COVID. Some businesses are mandating vaccines, which of course is following the lead of some cities nationally that have put blanket rules in place like that. Still kind of uncommon here, though. Others are requiring masks beyond Dane County, of course, which is still requiring mask wearing. And then we're also seeing some other area is getting impacted too. I mean, last week's U.S. Olympic speed skating trials, those were in Milwaukee. Last second decision, they ended up doing them without a live audience of spectators. And the effects of this, I would say, are just wide reaching. I mean, it may not be March 2020 levels, but we are still seeing this very clearly.
And you and Rich reported on Milwaukee restaurants. It sounds like exactly what we're hearing from Ruth nationwide. They're in some cases having trouble keeping enough, you know, cooks and wait staff on hand.
Right. I mean, for these business owners, I would echo what Ruth said. The pandemic fatigue is very real. And it's the sort of thing where they're not even bracing for the surge. It's already hit the surge. One of the business owners I talked to was Dan Jacobs. He runs three restaurants in the Milwaukee area. What he told me, one thing he said that stuck with me, was it's been difficult to build up momentum because every time his restaurants are starting to get to that point, something terrible happens that sends them careening right back down again. One of his restaurants is Fool's Errand. They closed on the 26th last month after a few employees tested positive for COVID. They only just reopened late last week. And then another Milwaukee restaurant, Odd Duck, they told Rich almost a third of their staff had COVID in the course of 2 weeks. There's just this feeling of we've done everything right and still it's come to this. These places haven't given up, of course. They're persevering, but the morale is just so low right now.
And Christine, before I let you go, you also talked to somebody with a business group in the Milwaukee area, basically begging people to listen to hospitals and other healthcare providers when it comes to vaccines and masking.
Yeah, I talked to, I'm the name escapes me, but I talked to this one gentleman who basically, he had to put out a message to the Chamber of Commerce that said, yeah, we're struggling here. Please take this seriously. We're barely hanging on. And it's a fine line you have to walk because, I mean, of course you want these businesses to succeed, but also you have to know when to take that step back. And by and large, at least in this neck of the woods, people are trying their best to take that step back while also keeping their businesses afloat.
Christine, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you once again.
That was WPR's Christine Hatfield with us today to talk about how small businesses in Wisconsin are being affected by the Omicron surge. Ruth Simon from the Wall Street Journal is still with us. Ruth, Christine said, yeah, these businesses, their goal, of course, is to stay open in the long run. Have you seen, though, businesses have to shut down, that don't weather the storm here?
I've seen businesses temporarily shut down because of this rise in virus cases. We have seen businesses permanently shut down over the course of the pandemic, not as many as was initially expected, in part because there was a fair amount of government aid. And I think the full impact of this will depend on how long it lasts. Everyone's hoping it will be short, painful, but short.
Now, we've been focusing on small businesses, our restaurants and others. Earlier, you mentioned manufacturers, which people don't necessarily think of feeling the impact of this. Can you talk a little more about how Omicron surges are affecting the manufacturing sector?
Like the restaurants or the salons or the spas, the manufacturers need workers on their premises. And so even if you're feeling kind of okay, but you're testing positive, you can't come in. And so I know, based on the reporting of some of my colleagues, some manufacturers who were already, like a lot of other businesses, didn't have enough workers, they're short on employees, so they've had to reduce production, or like these other businesses, have people put in more overtime. And it's very difficult because, again, these businesses have been strained already by the tight labor market and the other challenges related to supply chains and the virus and the like.
Right. And then does that in turn affect the supply chain more? If manufacturers can't go at full capacity, that, I don't know, small business owner who's counting on their products might be hit too.
And that's something we've heard throughout the pandemic about people having different shortages. At the end of last year, I did some reporting on the company that produces Fiestaware, and they had trouble getting the boxes, the cardboard boxes, to ship some of their China. So there is this ripple effect.
Ruth, we'll leave it there. Thanks for sharing your reporting with us today.
It was a pleasure to be with you. Thank you very much.
That's Ruth Simon. She's a reporter for the Wall Street Journal who covers small business and entrepreneurship. She was with us today to talk about the latest rise in COVID-19 cases and specifically how that's affecting small businesses around the country. And earlier, we got a report from Wisconsin with WPR's Second Century News fellow, Christine Hatfield. Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about encountering a stranger on a snowy road.
Driving home on a snowy Wisconsin night, author Crystal Chan and her mother encountered a hitchhiker in the blowing snow. The question of whether to pick him up or not led her to explore the meaning and limits of compassion. She brings us the story.
It was a bad snowstorm, the kind that wipes out your vision, erases the world, and makes you brake for a red light a full city block before you come to the intersection. It was nighttime, and my mom and I were in the car heading home over the viaduct on 20th Avenue in Oshkosh. The radio was off as my mom handled the vehicle on the heavy, slippery roads. That was when we saw him, a figure, hunched over, walking on the sidewalk on that viaduct in full blast of the winter storm. In fact, because of the storm, we almost didn't see him. What could he possibly be doing in a storm like this? I asked my mom. I don't know, she said. He trudged along. We inched along. Mom paused. Should we pick him up? I was surprised at her question. There are dangers out there, murderers and rapists and thieves. There we were, two women in a car in a snowstorm, the heater blazing. There he was, a young man, hunched over into the blinding winds, almost disappeared from view. You couldn't help but feel for him. I'd never picked up anyone before. I had a good hunch that my mom hadn't either. Yeah, I said. Let's pick him up. I rolled down my window. Hey, where are you going? I asked. He told us. The location was halfway across town. In the darkness, I looked at Mom and she looked at me. I looked back at him. Come on in if you want, I said. We'll take you there. We rolled to a slow stop and he opened the door to the back seat. A blast of cold air followed him in. We asked him some general questions, but he didn't say much, so we crawled through town in silence. I was sweating under my winter coat. He is in our car, I thought. I cannot believe we actually picked up a stranger. Mom gripped the steering wheel with both hands. The man spoke only to give us directions to the house, and when we pulled alongside it, he thanked us twice, then got out. As soon as he left, it was as if a sudden storm had lifted, even though it was still snowing. We turned around and crawled our slow way home, both deeply shaken, both deeply pleased. It's easy to say that compassion is a good thing. It's much harder to live it out, especially when you need to weigh things like risk and danger and fear. Mom and I both agreed that had we been the only one in the car, we would have kept driving. If there had been two men walking, we would have kept driving. And so forth. There are no easy answers, and I've messed up this equation more times than I'd like, preferring the route of safety to the route of lived-out compassion. But in extending that gesture of decency, somehow I felt more human in the process, more connected, less alone. It can be mysterious how compassion works, and how the strangest gifts can come in the strangest packaging in a snowstorm on a cold winter night.
Crystal Chan is a storyteller and author based in Chicago. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Be sure to subscribe to our podcast feed and find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent, it's this week's edition of Ask a Contractor, and this time around, it's going back to basics with an introduction to home repair, advice on manageable products that you could do yourself. Don't be shy. If you need some help or advice, you can get started right now. Email your questions to ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Also tomorrow, it was a big moment in Wisconsin sports history as the UW-Madison women's volleyball team took the national championship. The team's coach joins the show for a look back at the winning season and what's to come. And you can join in with your questions and your favorite moments along the way if you were watching. And it's the latest installment in a series of interviews with mayors from around Wisconsin. This week, we'll take a visit to Sheboygan. That's all coming up tomorrow morning here on the Ideas Network. On Food Friday last week, we talked to the author of a new cookbook about cooking with grains and beans. It reminded me of one of my biggest cooking fails. If you want a couple grain recipes that do work, you can find them at WPR.org/Food Friday. But here's my bad rice recipe fail. Back when I first lived alone, I tried a cooking technique called guessing, where I'd figure out a thing to make and then try to make it without a recipe or knowledge or anything. Mostly I made stuff that was edible, but not good. Then there's my stuffed pepper fiasco. I did a baked stuffed bell pepper thing, including rice. Now, the thing there is you want to cook the rice before you put it in the pepper, like all the recipes will call for cooked rice. And that's where I went wrong. I used uncooked rice. Here's the secret. Because there's no boiling water, the rice comes out of the baking process pretty much exactly like it came in. So if you like your stuffed peppers extra crunchy and not exactly digestible, then these are pretty good. If you want the real deal, though, cook the rice first. Now with extra crunch, this is Central Time.